Welcome home. We are WNST. AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. Positively getting you ready for the Rams and the Ravens. But picking up the residue of just a horrible, horrible beatdown on Sunday at the hands of the Houston Texans. We are getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. All of it presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have these Matt Raven scratch-offs. I kind of like these. They were a lucky batch. We were down at Fadley's in Lexington Market. I gave them out. People are digging them. We're having a good time. We're going to be at Coco's in a couple of weeks. We're rescheduling Costas because it's my birthday week this week. Till times get better. Half price beer for the whole city. I'm just making that up. Luke Jones is here. He is a Baltimore Luke out on the interwebs. We have we've talked about this, the fans leaving the game early and how bad it was and how nice the weather was and how awful the second string looked on Sunday. And Luke, I want to talk about accountability in this segment. This is, people are going to get a little itchy, and because I'm going to talk about media credentials, and I'm going to talk about the owner, and I'm going to talk about the coach, and I'm going to talk about tight end slipping out the back door when the season goes awry. And just in a general sense, accountability came up in the postgame, and I know you were in the room when Kyle Van Noy was asked, and there was a pregnant pause, and he had to think about it. And then he couched the answer the way he needed to couch the answer, maybe on the Aaron Rodgers show or the muscle guy from Indianapolis. I don't know, man. Like, I'm not around there, which, fill in your own punchline. I covered the team for 27 years off the bus. I was thrown out by a really, really horrible PR director who had no accountability in front of everyone. I documented it for all of them. I actually regurgitated it to Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh last week with mixed results after one of their players went after one of the media members for saying that they weren't accountable. It was an ugly week at practice last week. I can't imagine it's going to get better this week, Luke.
No, it's not. And look, I mean, accountability runs far more, far deeper, and far more consequential than talking to us media guys for 15 minutes after the game.
A right? million percent. That should be a bare minimum. You're right.
You know, that's the front-facing part, which I'm not
saying. And
they can't
even get, they haven't gotten that right.
But
they've been poor at that.
But in terms of what's really going to matter for a football team fixing it, you know, in terms of players playing better, coaches coaching better, everyone getting on the same page, assessing blame, but more so figuring out solutions, you know, that's done behind closed doors. So I would say this, and you made mention, you know, specifically Kyle Van Noy was asked about accountability. I will also say this, having covered him a few years now, he is apt to think about it at the podium for a few seconds, you know, with certain questions. So I don't want to make too much of that specific instance and say, and jump to the conclusion that, oh, well, that means they're not accountable, or he's saying certain individuals aren't.
Well,
accountable.
He lost his whole train of thought and said, what was your question at one
point? Right.
Because so, like in the aftermath of the game for a veteran player, who's only here to win a Super Bowl, who's now 1-4, he knows they're incapable of winning, right? He knows they're no good. He knows better than anybody in the room. They're no good right now. And they can't win with Cooper Rush, and they can't run the ball right now against a good team. They're not.
Well,
he
they're,
knows
they're
how, what a bad way they're in.
And they're not stopping the run, and they haven't gotten a pass. You know, they haven't gotten pressure on anyone that wasn't a statue. And Joe, I hate this. I feel like I'm picking on Joe Flacco so much, but like, that's literally the only point of reference you can talk about in terms of any success for the defense, right? I mean, at least the offense has put up points. It's just been this very Jekyll and Hyde kind of, the defense has just been playing bad. That's why I reject just chalking it up to injuries, because they weren't playing well even before some of these veteran, you know, including some of these veteran players themselves not playing well. But how do you fix it? And how do you get yourselves functioning at a higher level? I mean, for me, and again, this is where Sunday was so alarming. It's not that they lost. It's the way it looked, right? If they lost by 7, if they lost by 10.
I don't even say the way it looked. I'd say the way it felt.
Yeah. I mean, the way it looked, the way it felt, the way it, you know, the way it sounded, I guess, after the game, more so just I think guys just did not have many answers. I mean, I like the fact that guys weren't so eager to say, well, you saw who was missing, right? I mean, we didn't have Lamar. What do you expect? You know, you didn't hear that. We didn't have Roquan Smith. We didn't have Kyle Hamilton. You didn't hear that. We all know that that's a major part of this. You know, let's not be completely unfair amidst all the frustration. That's completely reasonable and questions that are very reasonable to ask. But you do question how you fix it. And that's where I think where Van Noy is coming from here in terms of, you know, when he was asked if there's been enough accountability after recent losses, and he said that's a good question. You know, I think maybe you can answer that better after the week. You know, and I think I don't know if he's talking just in terms of how we respond. You know, it speaking as Kyle Van Noy in terms of, okay, how do we respond against the Rams? What changes do we make at the bye? Because we know the bye week is following that. And that tends to be a time when players might get away, but the coaches really tend to drill down on self-scouting. And generally speaking, in these parts, you're talking about what has worked because the Ravens so rarely are in this kind of 1-4 territory that they find themselves right now. But you're also trying to figure out, okay, what hasn't worked? What tendencies do we need to break here? What's something that we need to pivot and do more of? What's something we found that we're actually good at? And, you know, we need to lean into that a little more and a little less of what we have been trying to do. I mean, all that takes place at the bye. And it's not to say that the bye week is when miracles are performed, right? I mean, there are certain elements of this football team, like the pass rush, for example, like the fact that you're going to have a defensive line that, by the way, had Travis Jones and Kyle Van Noy back on Sunday, right? I mean, as much as we can talk about the secondary and Roquan Smith being out, their defensive line, okay, you'll get Broderick Washington back, but Nnamdi Madubuike is not walking through that door. So that kind of sort is the group you're going to have. So boy, you either need to figure it out with those guys or Eric DaCosta needs to go make a move because that group's not even close to being good enough right now. But you know, that's where I think Van Noy was coming from a little bit more than necessarily it being a direct attack on a lack of accountability, but I don't know. Like, I can't read his mind, right? He's a veteran player who's clearly frustrated, to your point. He's in the, you know, the November of his career, Thanksgiving of his career at best. You know, even it might be closer to Christmas, you know, if you're going to use the calendar metaphor. And, you know, he went into this season thinking that he had a really great chance to win. I mean, we all thought that, right? I mean, we all thought that this, no one thought they were going to be 1-4. I mean, so yeah, the injuries are a big part of it. And as I've said, the silver lining, and I'll continue to point it out because it is extremely valid, is that they're going to get guys back. You'd like to think you have the personnel to do this. I mean, all the talk about your roster, and, you know, even though it's funny, I saw someone make reference to this, you know, and it might have been during the Sunday night game as the Bills were losing. But Marv Levy had the quote that, you know, depth is a great thing until you need to use it. Well, the Ravens, they've kind of found the answer out, you know, found out the answer to that one here over, you know, certainly against Houston. But, you know, they've got to find answers. The offense, it's kind of easy right now to look and say, okay, clearly, there's a major drop off when you go from Lamar Jackson to Cooper Rush, and clearly they need to get more consistent. But there's a much higher baseline to go off of. I mean, I think they're still sixth or seventh in the league in scoring. I mean, it's clear the offense hasn't been like this miserable unit from start to finish, right? I mean, it's just been they haven't been able to sustain drives. When it's been good, it's been great, but they've also had these stretches where they've really faltered at some critical times. The defense has just been playing bad for all but one game, right? I mean, that's where you look at it and say, where's the base? How are we raising the floor here? How are we raising the baseline, right? I mean, that was a big part of what they did last November when they finally said, okay, we're done with Marcus Williams in the starting lineup. As much as we love playing Kyle Hamilton all over the field and closer to the line of scrimmage, we've got to elevate the floor of our pass defense. So we're going to put Kyle Hamilton back in a more conventional safety spot. Even if that means he's not going to make the same splash plays, we think we're going to remedy giving up big plays. And we're going to put Ardarius Washington into the lineup every snap because he's played well. And boom, before you know it, they're playing much better. Albeit, and I've seen a few people point this out here over the last couple of weeks, they didn't necessarily play a juggernaut slate of offenses late last year. So maybe there was a hint of some smoke and mirrors going on there. You know, that it wasn't this elite unit suddenly, but it was just merely better. And you know, I'll hear that to a point, but they also, you know, held the Texans to 2 points on, you know, the defense pitched a shutout against the Texans on Christmas Day last year. And it's not like the Texans were complete stiffs. So, but wherever they are right now, I mean, you've got to start being able to stop the run, somewhat at least. You've got to find a way to harass quarterbacks a little bit more. And I don't know exactly what that answer is, Nestor. You know, I think one point that I look at with their coverage is back end. They're trying to not have the ball thrown over their head to the degree that it did last year. And they haven't necessarily given up a ton of huge plays like that, but they can't get off the field on third down, right? So at some point, you have to look at this and say, well, you're still giving up 35 points a game. Maybe it's been a little more death by paper cut than, you know, two play, three plays, 80-yard kind of
And they've
drive.
missed a couple of field goals in there,
Yeah,
right? Yeah. A
but
couple 50-yard field
at
goals
some
too.
point, you have to question that and say, do, you know, we're not making stops anyway.
Well, you're
And
not
it,
making the other team punt. Let's start
right.
with
So,
that, right?
do you have to maybe look at this and say, maybe we do need to take a few more chances. And that, look, it might end up being just as bad, but this isn't working, right? This off coverage, keeping everything in, like, it's still not working, right? So you can say all you want, well, we don't want to get beat over the top. Well, you're still getting beat overall. So maybe you do need to blitz a little more. Maybe you need
Well,
to
when you
run
have
much more
different
more.
quarterbacks coming up here who can't beat you over the top or don't have systems, Jake Browning's not going to beat you over
Sure.
the top, right? So,
Well, he
you know,
still has Ja'Marr Chase, but
yeah,
yeah, I
okay,
understand your point.
but I think it has been different the last
Sure.
month when it's Goff and Mahomes, you know, and even
Yeah.
CJ Stroud, who's no slouch, by the way.
He's not, but he also wasn't playing at a very high level. I mean, he going back to last year hasn't, you know, you look at where he finished off his rookie season. I mean, let's call a spade. The Ravens are a get well opponent at this point on defense at the very least. I mean, my goodness, how could they? Again, Joe Flacco and the Browns. All right, I'll give you that one. Sure. Defense, two takeaways. You know, they harass Joe Flacco because he can't move, you know,
That's
all
two
that.
more than the Jets, who have the
But
worst in the history of the game, or something like that. So,
yeah.
yeah, it's not that far off.
Well, but that's their it's the Ravens' only takeaways are the two in that game, the Wiggins interception and the
You'd have
Roquan
to think
fumble
there'd be a
recovery.
peanut punch in there somewhere, right?
Yeah,
Some.
somewhere. I mean, you'd like to think that. And
Well, they put no pressure on the quarterback at all. There's
oh,
been
they're
no,
not.
or I mean, I've never seen anything quite like this, especially in a month when I actually touched John Dutton and Joe Urban, you know,
I
part
mean,
of the
it's
sack
just,
pack.
I mean, they've had, it's not, they were middle of the pack in takeaways last year. I mean, 2 years ago, they led the league in takeaways, right? I mean, with Mike McDonald. But last year, obviously, it dropped off. And this year, I mean, you know, again, they have two takeaways through five games. I mean, I don't need to, you know, you don't need to be a math genius to figure out that that's not very many. I mean, you're talking about a single digits pace for turnovers. For a season. So,
Well, let's
yeah.
talk about accountability here, because I really did want to
I mean,
talk
that's
about
fine.
that. And for me, I would just say this on accountability. Harbaugh getting screamed at coming off the field and fire John Harbaugh, who has 3 years left on his deal, and who is the son to the owner, and the general manager who's going nowhere, both of them will do what they did to me in the Garden of Eden down there in Florida, right 5 minutes before Chad Steele threw me out after 27 years of doing my job on behalf of the fans and asking tough questions and holding these people accountable. They're injured, you know, like it's so easy for John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta to say the six highest paid guys aren't on the field. We're going to get our ass kicked. Have you seen Cooper Rush? We're going to get our ass kicked. It's easy for you and me to say, get a better backup quarterback, figure out left tackle. Maybe you shouldn't have given Roquan all that money 4 years ago when Luke said you shouldn't have. Maybe, you know, I don't go on and on. Maybe Jaire Alexander wasn't a great Band-Aid for you, or a great clubhouse guy. Maybe he wasn't a great chemistry guy for you. I don't know. We can go on and on and on and on. But somebody's ass is getting fired for this, and I'm guessing it's going to be Zach Orr, and I'm guessing that that's going to be what accountability for a franchise that's looked the other way on a running back punching his wife in a glass elevator, an owner who has evaporated, a PR director that has gone around basically intimidating everyone in the media. I'm just the one that gave him a middle finger and said, "We're not going to play that. You're not going to tell me what questions I'm going to ask in press conferences and tell me what I can and can't say on a radio station that I've spent my whole life buying and owning from the FCC, as well as to an audience that I owe absolute reality, absolute truth to." I had some jack wagon on my Facebook over the weekend telling me, I had somebody actually at Living Classroom say I was too harsh. I'm like, on what? On the fascist who's locking up people to look like me with masks, or on the head coach who's making $20 million a year, who seeded the whole notion that I should be on the internet having my credibility questioned. So when it comes to accountability for them, from Ray Rice through Justin Tucker, through how they treat the media, just all the way through how they deal with turmoil, how they don't show up at podiums when their season ends in Mark Andrews, but they can make commercials, how their quarterback once told a man in Pennsylvania to perform fellatio on him, and it sat up on Twitter for 5 days until Lamar's girlfriend told him to take it down. Like, to drafting a second round pass rusher whom they need right now, who is not capable at this point of getting after the quarterback who had two sexual assault allegations in college, and signing a lineman in Ben Cleveland who went out drinking, driving allegedly, and then they give him a pile of money and say, "Come on back in." Like, they have no accountability. I held the head coach accountable last week. I'll make that public in my time. Maybe this week. I don't know. It feels like piling on when you stink as bad as they do. But they are professionals. They are being paid. Just like you and me are professionals in holding them accountable. You are allowed professional access. I'm treated like I have a different water fountain out back. And this is who they are. This is who they've been through the Justin Tucker thing. This is how they are inside of their own building as it pertains to women and as it pertains to power and as it pertains to being right all the time and being above the fray and above any criticism. That guy, Sashi Brown's been running around making $1 million a year for a couple of years now, a couple million dollars a year, and hasn't had to answer a real question. So top down, and Bisciotti's running. He ran for me, and you witnessed it. You were the only one that witnessed it, but you witnessed it. So I would just say, accountability, where art thou?
We're going to find out. We're going to find out. I mean, if there is none, then they're probably not going to climb out of a 1-4 hole, right? And then they're going to be dealing with a half empty stadium down the stretch, right? I mean,
Boy,
because
was that a shitty look. I
well,
mean, whoa. Oh my God. Like, when they turn 10 minutes left in the third quarter, it's half empty. Nobody came back after halftime.
well, I mean, I
And
can't
by the
blame people
time
for
was
leaving at that
3 minutes
point.
left in the third quarter, it was worse than any preseason game I have ever seen. And I'm thinking to myself, what would make me walk out? Well, I'm a reporter, Chad, so I would stay in the seat that I paid for until the end and then come down to the locker room and ask questions on the behalf of the citizens, on behalf of the fans, on behalf of your club black wing platinum, whatever the hell it is, end zone, touchdown, goal post, premium lounge crowd. They were gone too. Even the free buffet didn't keep them around, I guess. I've eaten the food, so I know better.
Well, I mean, for me, look, fans leaving early in a game like that. I mean, it's a beautiful day.
All I'm saying is
go
I've
have some
never
fun.
seen it. That's
No,
all.
no,
I,
no.
in the history of 30 years,
I
I've
guess.
never seen anything like that on Sunday. Never. Never.
I mean, there have been
I
some
go
games where
back to
people left.
Jacksonville ass kickings in 98.
2007 Sunday night loss to the Colts. I left that game early as a fan, and I never left games early. Sunday night game, getting their butts kicked, embarrassed. There have been a few, but
You're
you're
talking about
right.
the Bowler
There.
when they cheered Bowler getting hurt
No,
that
no, no.
game?
That was 2 years before.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Sunday night game lost to the Colts the week after they lost to the Patriots.
Gotcha. I remember that one. Back
I
to
mean,
back.
they got completely massacred in that game. It was, you know, the Patriots game the week before was Custer's last
By
stand,
the way,
and
that was the year that Feinstein wrote the book.
I
Believe
thought
it?
that was no, that was on the '04 season, I thought.
Okay.
Any, you
They
know,
lost a
or
couple of bad games that this Pittsburgh or
right,
New England,
it's
they lost
rare.
that year.
It's rare, right?
Yes.
And I was just, you know, I wasn't poking holes in your argument as much as just acknowledging it's been a couple, but not many. For me, it's not, it wasn't the fans leaving. It was the fans that never, like,
By the
they're
way,
empty.
you're also talking about all the stuff that got Billick fired in the end.
Sure,
Yeah.
but for me, it was the empty seats that stayed empty from pregame on through. I mean, there were no shows. Now, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like 40,000 no shows, but it was noticeable. Secondary market was what it was, and obviously Houston's not a team that has a lot of juice in
I think
terms
some
of,
people put $39 up on their ticket and they weren't going to get $40. They were just going to
yeah
eat it and they ate it.
yeah and they went to a brewery, or they did something else on Sunday, because
Mowed
it
their
was a
lawn.
beautiful October Sunday afternoon in the Baltimore area. So, like, you know, I certainly get it, you know, but it also speaks to the state of affairs.
It was a
And
look. That's all I'm
yeah,
saying. It was a
sure.
visual that
Every,
was stunning.
I mean, there was that, and just the way they played, right? I mean, again, as I said, it's not that they lost, it's the manner in which it occurred. It's the utter lack of fight that they showed. That's what was eye-opening. That's what was illuminating here. And that's where you question, okay, are you going to get off the mat here? Are you going to, yes, you'll get healthy, but that doesn't mean you're not going to have more injuries as the season goes on. And, you know, do you get into a spot where guys start to lose trust in either one another or their coaches? Do guys start making business decisions, right? I mean, and it's too early to talk about in those terms when you're 1-4, but if 1-4 somehow becomes, you know, is 2-7, and you get some more injuries right out of the after the
I
bye
would say
week.
Kyle Van Noy does not want to play on a 2-7 football team.
Sure. I mean, Kyle Van Noy alluded over the summer, alluded to the fact that he didn't love his contract even being on a team that he fancied as a serious Super Bowl contender, right? And look, part of that is also Kyle Van Noy's at a certain age, and God bless, he had a career year in terms of sacks, but, you know, this isn't someone who's a seven-time Pro Bowl player or someone like Terrell Suggs with 100+ career sacks. So, you know, there's a certain recognition there of him needing to understand where he is in his career and how
What's your
he's
wrestling?
perceived.
Know your role.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. But that said,
But his
you,
role as the leader coming out and talking about this on Sunday,
right.
in the, you know, really the first meaningful time he's gotten on the field for the, you know, like, this is my point being nobody signed up for 2-7
No
around here.
question. No
Nobody.
question.
Derrick Henry putting his very valuable body on the line. 2-7, he might as well have kept his ass in Tennessee and ran around in an Oilers jersey.
Yeah, I mean, so they've got, I mean, there's a lot of soul searching going on, you know, for this week, and especially then the bye week, right? I mean, we talked about it last week, you know, in the aftermath of Lamar leaving the game, the uncertainty early in the week before it became apparent by Friday that he wasn't going to play, and then ultimately they ruled him out anyway. But we talked about the ramifications of 1-5, right? And that's why, to me, it felt so important for them to try to figure out some kind of way to win this football game so that you could at least guarantee yourself 2-4 at the bye week, right? I mean, 2-4 doesn't feel great. Don't get me wrong. Even if the Ravens somehow pull off a win against the Rams on Sunday, 2-4 doesn't feel good at all, but it's a heck of a lot better than 1-5. You know, 1-5 feels eerily similar to how the Ravens or how the Orioles felt Memorial Day weekend, right? I mean, the Orioles were 16-34 and never recovered, never seriously recovered at any point. You know, they had their little run in early June that, you know, got to 11 under, and you thought, okay, if they can really start playing great baseball from this point on, there's a path. Never happened. That 1-5 feels like that. And how many times during baseball season were we talking about, oh, well, you know, once they get this guy back, or they get this guy back, and, you know, Bradish and Wells and all, right? You know, I mean, those things that, even the things that did happen late in the season, like Bradish and Wells coming back, didn't matter. Mathematically, they were cooked. They had already been sellers, all that. When you're 1-5, I get it. There's 11 games left after that. Stranger things have happened in the realm of professional sports, but man, there's no margin for error whatsoever. I mean, you've got to go on a heck of a run just to hope to maybe get to 10 wins. Forget about 13-4 or dreams of being the number one seed. Although, point out, Buffalo lost on Sunday night. No more unbeatens in the NFL through 5 weeks, which is on the quick side, it feels like, compared to most seasons. But I mean, that's not what the season was supposed to be about. Circling the wagons just to make the playoffs. It's not what this is supposed to be about. The standard's supposed to be way higher than that at this point in time. And that's where, yeah, we do come back to the accountability question. And you have to question, is the message getting stale with John Harbaugh and this coaching staff? Is Eric DaCosta doing everything he can from a roster building standpoint? I mean, let's face it, they basically ran it back, right? I mean, they came as close as you can come to running it back, right? And okay, every team drafts players, so throw the draft picks out for a moment, right? Regardless of the quality of those guys or not. And I see some fans that are really down on Malachi Starks. Like, let's wait, let this play out. I mean, Kyle Hamilton, 5 games into his NFL career, people were calling that a bust, and how dumb was
Well,
that last
especially
night?
when everything around you is getting
Yeah,
blown up too.
exactly,
You know, he's
exactly.
not back
So,
there with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis right now either, you know.
but in terms of what they did in free agency or via trade. Okay, I'll hear DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins looks good, right? Was it their absolute biggest need? I mean, they threw the ball all over the place last year at a high degree. But I'm certainly not going to criticize that signing for $5 million. He's been as good as you could have reasonably expected. Jaire Alexander's been a zero. I mean, to your point, I mean, the most notable things he's his most notable aspects as a Raven so far, or are getting completely picked on at the end of the Buffalo game and taking away the ball from someone because he was mad he did the Ray Lewis dance after a touchdown on Sunday. I mean, and look, in the grand scheme of things, I don't care that much about that, but how about being good enough that your coaches want to put you on the field? I mean, I get it. They didn't give him much money, and we talked about that, but he's been a zero so far. I mean, he's been a net negative based on the Buffalo game alone, right? I mean, not his what amount he played on Sunday was kind of inconsequential, right? But I mean, he's been a net negative, and he was on paper looked to be your high profile signing, your high profile addition to your defense. Albeit it's a 1 year deal, I get that. But did Eric DaCosta need to be a little more dynamic in how he built this roster, right? I mean, we all made assumptions, and I also go back to John Harbaugh, and I think he has attributed it to Bo Schembechler, even though multiple coaches have said this over the years, that you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're not staying the same. And from a roster standpoint, there wasn't dynamic change. And I'm not saying like needed to be radical, but they didn't go out and get a high profile established pass rusher, right? Which felt like one of those missing piece type deals you could make. They didn't sign a number three veteran safety as I was clamoring for from the moment they lost Ardarius Washington, right? Which was mid-May. It's not as though that happened on August 30th. There were options out there, including options that didn't cost a lot of money. You kind of go down the list, and yeah, I am going to question the roster building, and I am going to question John Harbaugh's coaching and his staff, right? And wondering if the message is getting stale in some ways. That doesn't mean that automatically means they're going to go 5-12 and he's automatically should be fired or anything. But when you're 1-4, these things have to be asked. John likes to talk about confronting failure, right? Confronting losing, right? I mean,
He can't even confront me and look at me, dude. So I mean, listen, I shipped him off a note last week before they lost. I like accountability. That's the theme of all of this. Accountability for all of them. Mark Andrews can't go to a podium. They can't get Jaire Alexander in line. I mean, they can't get their owner to answer questions. They can't get their team president to answer questions. So I would just say accountability all the way around is something that they have an answer for their kicker. Yeah, so they just They usually don't have to answer questions. They just say, look, 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 we're going to win next week. We're going to win next week. What happens when you don't win next week? Because they've done a lot of winning around here that
Sure.
sanitized everything. Like Lamar coming here really, you know, changed a lot of things for John Harbaugh's
Sure.
trajectory, Eric DaCosta, all of that, and the way it's worked out. And it's no accident. I give John a lot of credit.
Right,
Although he thinks I hate him, John, I don't hate you. I don't hate anyone. I hold you accountable. I don't hate you. I'm holding you accountable right now. Accountability is my theme for the week for these people, for all of them. Top
well,
down, shoddy down, all of them.
and I would say to be very clear, the same is true of Brett Veach, and we don't think of Andy Reid as this major genius if they don't draft Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, there's a great coaches, great executives, great football teams are always going to be married to the players that lead to success, right? And it's a give take. We wouldn't remember Bill Walsh in the way we do if the 49ers didn't draft Joe Montana, right? I mean, Brady and Belichick, right? I mean, go down the list. I mean, so that shouldn't be meant as a way of being dismissive of John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta. They deserve credit for their part. And in the same way that Lamar Jackson was a transcendent talent that a lot of people really got wrong. And a lot of people showed their, you know what, in how they viewed him. And even, you know, that lingers a little bit in some circles even today. I mean, not like it did 7 years ago, but at the same time, when you are faced with the amount of adversity that they're facing right now in terms of, yes, the injuries in the short term, but just the ramifications of getting off to a 1-4 start and staring down the barrel of 1-5 going into the bye, and understanding what the math entails to climb out of that kind of hole the rest of the way. Yeah, we're going to find out about that accountability piece. Not necessarily in a front-facing way, but the results on the field, right? I mean, you know, everything you're talking about, and I'm not being dismissive of that, but there certainly has been a level of accountability on the field and to each other, because you wouldn't have results like they've had over the long haul without being accountable to one another behind closed doors and inside the facility, inside the meeting rooms, inside the locker room, right? That's been one of my biggest rejections of this idea that the Ravens have won in spite of John Harbaugh for 18 years to the degree that they have. If he were truly as incompetent as his biggest critics make him out to be, they would not win football games at the level that they've won them. Now, that doesn't mean he's beyond reproach. That doesn't mean that there's been flaws and fatal flaws to contributed to the downfall of this team in January, right? I mean, I'll hear all that, but just this idea that John Harbaugh is just this idiot that they've dragged to victories for 18 years. No, like I that
Dude,
people won't
Harbaugh
realize.
thinking that I hate him. I have never opened this microphone, never once in 18 years, and suggested that John Harbaugh be fired. And guess
Sure.
what? I'm not going to do that today because he's not getting fired. The owner thinks of him like a son. He's got 3 years left on his deal. John's not getting fired. John's going to find a fall guy because that's what he does. So Zach Orr's going to be out the side door. He's going to give you somebody's head because it's not going to be his, because that's not the way this organization works. It's just not. And if
Well,
Zach
I
Orr
mean,
gets
there's probably.
fired next week, this week, at the end of the year, whatever, Pagano, John goes out and finds the next Mike McDonald, the next genius, which was what he thought he had in Zach Orr. There's no way Zach Orr is going to be a genius with Matt Ibike out, Jones injured, Roquan Smith missing, Marlon Humphrey missing, Nate Wiggins gimpy, no pass rush. He didn't have the ingredients. He didn't shop for the groceries. So, like, the beating on Zach Orr, have at it. John's going to fire somebody. It ain't going to be John. And I'm not here to fire John. I'm here to hold John accountable.
Fair enough.
That's it.
The point I was trying to finish was, I will continue to this day to reject the notion that John Harbaugh is this incompetent idiot that the Ravens have been dragging to 11 and 12 win, you know, 10, 11, 12 win seasons for all but a couple years of his entire tenure.
He's a hell of a football coach.
Yeah.
I've said that a million
What?
times.
What? How are they
I
going to
wrote that in a
respond?
book.
And I generally speaking agree with you, but if this completely goes off the rails, I don't know. And look, You might be right about Steve Bisciotti there, but if this completely goes off the rails and the injuries don't relent and they go 6-11, I don't know. I don't know. I really start to question then if it has run its
Well, I'll
course.
tell you what, Steve didn't like at all. Steve doesn't like an empty stadium.
Well, and that and but that's the a byproduct
But Steve
of that
doesn't
kind of
have
a
a head coach
scenario.
that recruits the community. He has a fraud up in front of this. Not a real community. I mean, look, I sat in the office with David Modell 25 years ago. I wrote it in Purple Rain what they wanted in their coach. The coach is not in the modern era here to talk to the community or recruit the community. All that was built in with all the PSLs that were in. John was not hired to be out at the barn on Monday nights, hanging out and being nice to the people who actually fund all of this in the PSL. I mean, they are a corporate, I mean, they're a sleazy operation in many, many, many capacities. And I've written about it. See Tucker, see just in a general sense, how they've treated the media behind closed doors and in front facing. So like I've seen how they feel about guys with character issues and whether they'll draft them, whether they'll put them on the team, whether they'll cover for them or not. So for me, this has only been about one thing, winning football games. That's it. That's it. And
Yeah.
you would say that's all they're about anyway. Okay, great. They're not about the community. They're not
And if
about
they.
Baltimore. They're not about recruiting. They're about selling Blackwin memberships much more so than $39 tickets. Like I'll playing games in Madrid, playing games in Brazil. I get all of that. But at the end of the day, John's job's not to be front facing to anyone in the community. So, and quite frankly, he's salty in your presence, in my presence. There were times I'd give my whole day up, drive over to Owings Mills to hear 12 minutes of what he has to say, and he acts like a jerk. And that's gone on. And the fans have seen this. Fans have seen this. So when the fans turn on him and are booing him in an empty stadium, and the fans are leaving the stadium, and the fans are calling the fan and lighting up the phone lines with Fire John, Fire John, this is not going to be the Fire John network. It's just not. It's just not. If Steve wants to fire John, he'll fire John. I don't believe that will happen. I don't even believe that maybe should happen. I think they have an ethos issue. I think they have an accountability. I don't think. I know they have an accountability issue. I have firsthand experience with this. I'm a professional. I've been doing this longer than anybody in the market. They have an accountability power God issue. They think they're God. They think they have power. They think they're above accountability. And then the stadium empties out. The coach gets yelled at. And I'm getting texts from him asking me why I hate him. If I hated you, John, I'd be calling for you to get fired every day. It's not who I am. And I don't believe you're getting fired. I do believe you're a fraudulent individual, John. And I would tell you that to your face behind your back. But you're a hell of a football coach. Now, what's going on now? Luke, if it was just you and me and I were protecting John, it'd be very easy to talk about these injuries and say that does them in because I think at the top of the day, these injuries would do them in. I didn't think they were going to beat the Texans, but to your point, the effort, the post game, do we believe in ourselves? The coach coming in like a church mouse after they get their ass kicked and acting like a diff like the godly human he portrays himself to be, as opposed to the jerk he's been to me behind and in front of closed doors. And if anybody saw the Brent Harris preseason thing, it's more garden variety, John, as I know it to be. So I would just say John's going to have to deal with everybody else swirling to get him fired. I'm not the one looking to get John fired, but I'm saying they've burned up goodwill when people are walking out of the stadium and they don't believe a word any of them says, nor should they believe a word that's said, because I'm skeptical of most of what's said around there and done around there because I've been thrown out. So, and they would throw you out or anybody else out if they could. So to me, accountability when Mark Andrews doesn't show up at a podium after they lose again, just in general, what accountability stands for, I would have said that had they won 44-10 on Sunday. I've been saying that for a long time, that they lack accountability. And the Justin Tucker thing this offseason, my God. I mean, It smells to high hell, all of it, 10 years ago. Nobody knew. Sure.
Maybe this is all of that catching up to them then. I mean,
The
you're on
injuries are what's done them in. I mean, I'll start at that. They don't have great football
the
players on the
defense.
field.
The defense has stunk. Injuries are not why this defense. The defense stunk in the fourth quarter in Buffalo. Okay, congratulations, you beat the Cleveland Browns. They stunk against Detroit when Madubuike and Van Noy were the only ones missing. They had all those other guys. They had everyone but those guys for Kansas City until late in the second quarter when Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey go out. So they stunk in that game. They stunk Sunday. I mean,
Well, the evaluation of Marcus Williams stunk. The coaching of Marcus Williams stunk. The coaching of the linebackers and the evaluation of Simpson and Buchanan's.
yeah.
So, I mean,
I mean, but
but the
also.
evaluation on Madubuike is good.
But
The trade for Roquan Smith, really good, Eric. Good job. Drafting Wiggins and Starks remains to be seen, right? So, I mean, we're trying to be fair and like being fair to Mike Elias to say, well, you're the village idiot for, I don't know, thinking Charlie Morton could do it, but you look like a genius with Trevor Rogers if we just give it a little bit of time. So,
sure, I mean, there's
time and
all.
energy will sort out Wiggins and Starks and the younger guys, but where they are right now as a Super Bowl component team right now, they're 1-4 and they've earned it.
They're very lacking in critical ways, right? It doesn't mean that it's going to continue to be that way. I mean, look, in reality, do I think they're going to go 4-13 this year? Of course not. In the same way that when the Orioles were 16-34, I didn't think that they were going to lose 110 games, right? Which was, I think, right around what that pace was at that point in time, just off the top of my head, whatever it was. But
You're just trying to get him to 7-7 at this point, right? Like
sure.
literally, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you get the seven, like, sure. I mean, that's you look at that as what should be very reasonable to do, given their schedule, given the fact that these injuries aren't all season-ending, 12 critical players on IR kind of a state of affairs. But a lot of this is still goes back to what's under the hood and where's this team's mindset? Where are they between the ears right now? Is the coaching, are players tuning out the coaches? Are players trusting one another? Are guys trying to play hero ball? Like, there's all of that in addition to the injuries where you're trying to climb out of it. And they circled the wagons last year at 0-2. Man, this is way worse than 0-2. The smell test and the record. So, yeah, we're going to find out. And we're going to be asking questions about the coaching staff and the players and front office and what Eric DaCosta can do or not do at the trade deadline, all that. So this is it's not good. And yeah, I agree. Injuries are such a significant part of it, but I can't just sign off on that and say que sera, sera, right? I mean, it's not just that. There's more going on here, and that was showing up even before these injuries mounted the last couple of weeks.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. I am Nestor. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I will have Raven scratch offs to give away all fall long. We're Coco's first week in November. I am rescheduling Costas this week because of my birthday. Some stuff going on. We're hoping to get there next week. Had some guests blow up on me this week as well, but I did have a delicious dinner. Had the Crab Imperial. And it was fantastic on Saturday. I watched a little baseball out of Costas and Timonium. Even had young people singing Rush songs to me because I was wearing my Rush stuff. It was not my Cooper Rush stuff, I assure you of that. Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke. I am particularly feisty this week on the John Harbaugh debate and on an empty stadium and on the Zach Orr situation. And 1-4 starts, man. I gotta go into my Wayback Machine to think about little Nasty Nestor around here in 96, 97. 97 wasn't even all that bad. 98. 3-1 start one of those years, right? In 97, I believe it was. They're all running together. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We have plenty more football ahead. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, holding the Ravens accountable. Yeah, we're the only ones. We're Baltimore positive.